Hello, heroes. Welcome to Modifier. I'm your host, Megan Dornbrock. There's usually a sweet spot when it comes to the number of players you want to have for a tabletop RPG. It varies from game to game, but typically 3 to 5 players plus a GM is what we're used to. Oftentimes, we tailor our game groups to that expectation. But what about the times when that won't quite work, or we just want a different experience? This is the first of 2 episodes about scaling games. This episode, part 1, is all about making games big. Multi-table or multi-DM convention games, or the specials, as Pathfinder players have come to know them, are games that allow for up to hundreds of players at a time. Perfect for conventions, these games aren't necessarily something you'll be doing with your home group around your own table, but their approaches to planning and storytelling might give you some new tricks to try. To talk about more players, I thought we should have more guests, and I'm happy to say we have 3 of the best this week for this discussion. Jeffrey Peart, Troy Pitchelman, and Darcy Ross are all here to share their experiences running and playing in some of these massive con games. Let's get to the show. Joining me this week, we've got a full house to talk about multi-table, multi-GM convention games. We've got Jeffrey Peart, Troy Pitchelman, and Darcy Ross. And that's the order that you show up in Zencaster. So if you guys want to go ahead and introduce yourselves, we'll start with Jeffrey.
Sure. I've been gaming for most of my life with a brief hiatus after university. I'm up here in Toronto. I guess I got back into gaming when Pathfinder branched off from Dungeons & Dragons and started out the local game and local crowd, and while on a business trip found this Pathfinder Society thing and have been participating there for the last 5 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's awesome.
Awesome.
How about you, Troy?
Yeah, I've been gaming for quite a while, and I have been playing a lot of Cypher System games, and currently am hosting the Cypher Speak podcast with my wonderful co-host, who also happens to be here. And besides that, I just play a lot of games and have a lot of fun.
Awesome. And hey, wonderful co-host, Darcy.
Oh, thank you. So I'm Darcy Ross. I do a lot of weird things. I am known for my love of mollusks and my co-hosting of CypherSpeak. I've been gaming a long time, but I've only in the last few years become a GM. And so I feel like to make up for lost time, I've done a lot of weird kinds of GMing. So I'm excited to talk about one of those weird kinds of GMing tonight.
Oh, man. Now I'm curious to find out what other weird kinds of GMing you've
done. Well, you'll have to have me back, Meg.
I will. I will do that. You have to let me in on these secrets. Because this type of game, this type of gaming is something that I really only heard about at Gen Con, was my first exposure to this type of game. And it sounds like, Jeffrey, you've been doing this for quite a while. So I was curious how long you've been participating in this style of game, and do any of you know when this started?
So as far as I can reckon, Paizo did one in their 3rd season of Pathfinder Society, maybe earlier than that. So we just entered our 8th season, so about 5 years ago was when the format for them started to come together, and I'll probably get in trouble for being wrong, but it sounds about right.
And then D&D Next had like some Attack on Candle Keep events before they launched at Gen Con 3 years ago. So those were some multi-table events that they were doing. So that was at least 3 years ago. But I don't know of anything before that. That was
I played in a 2-table game, so a little bit smaller than like the specials and the epics at Gen Con 8 or 9 years ago.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
Definitely on the smaller scale, it's been around for quite a while where it's just a couple of tables and some mixing and matching happens. But yeah, as far as like the large scale, I don't know if L5R has ever done anything or some of like story games, right, where they've had larger events.
We'll ask Jim. It's fine.
Yeah, Jim will know.
Okay, so I guess we'll explain what we're talking about a little bit. So these multi-table games, they're more than just several games going on simultaneously in the same room. They're interconnected games, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work? Like, how many people play in these kind of games?
So for Pathfinder, you have your typical table of 6 players and a GM. The specials typically require at least 5 tables to kick off. So there you have, 30 people alone, minimum. And I know at Gen Con, we typically seat 150 tables for our special.
Wow. all interconnected in the same game?
All playing the same game.
What is happening? Wow. Okay.
So when you start getting on that scale, it's more bodies get involved, runners and coordinators and sort of room GMs to the process, but lots of people.
Wow. And you primarily facilitate or exclusively facilitate Pathfinder?
In a con setting, yeah, just Pathfinder.
Okay. And Troy and Darcy, I know you were doing Cypher System games at Gen Con, right? Was that it?
Yep. That's from a Gen Con perspective, it was all Cypher System games. And our games there were 6 tables of 6 players apiece. Mm-hmm. And then my other experience is with running and playing in 2 table games. So you just have 2 GMs and 2 tables worth of players.
But with a lot of fluidity between players moving from table to table, which I think was pretty unique.
Yes.
Does that happen much in the Pathfinder games? Do players move from table to table or they stay put?
Typically players stay put, but there's often a mechanic where one table can help another table or where the success of sort of groups of people move the story forward through the room and bring boon or woe into the room. What I just did recall is this year for the first time, Paizo has, of course, the adventure card game that that they introduced 2 years ago. And I don't know a lot of the details of the game, but they started an organized play format for that game last year. And at this year's special, the card game was playing the same story with at least a dozen tables, with different objectives, but contributing to the overarching story. And so we were literally playing 2 different games while playing the same story all at once.
Wow. That's so much going on. Are there like overseers to this? Because you've got your game master at your specific table, but there's got to be people kind of coordinating all the in-betweens, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is an overseer role inside the format that's required. And the bigger you get, you sort of need sub-overseers just to run the coordination of information. It's important that the table sort of, as you progress through the scenario and have encounters, you report successes, and it's not just a count of successes. There's types of successes and when these, intertable events happen. And so you need runners and overseers to sort of put it all together. And then sort of someone super coordinating the whole thing who decides as the story progresses.
Yeah, similarly with a Cypher System 6 game we played at Gen Con, there was one runner who I think got a big workout during that game because there were a couple like prescripted events that would affect mechanically the other tables. If one group got to do a thing, they shut off power to a different district, right? But there was a real encouragement for getting crazy creative and communicating and just sending messages across. And so I feel like the most fun I had was doing stuff that was very, very far afield from what was written in the adventure, which was pretty, pretty like bare bones to begin with. So I think it's probably harder to ensure that everyone has a good experience, but the fluidity of it really worked for my table and my weird style of jamming. So but definitely one runner per 6 tables, I think, is as low as you can go. Brandon Gordon got quite a workout.
I think the art that they've mastered is coming up with semaphore and hand signals. So the runners don't need to run very far. They're just arms crossed and open and number of fingers up.
Oh, that's delightful.
Oh, that's cool. So with Pathfinder, with groups that are that big, what's an example of the type of story that they would be playing?
So the idea within Pathfinder Society, just as I often describe it to new players, is the society is the organized group of Indiana Joneses. Go out, discover new things, and put it in a museum. And so often there's a story, you know, overseeing a given season. We have our arch nemesis and our rivals. We have our Nazis who think all the treasure should be taken at half cost and put in a sold to the highest bidder. And so these overarching stories either start or end at one of our season specials. Mm-hmm. So last year we were particularly at war with our rivals. And so the season begins with, the society is gathering for their annual convocation. And while they're all gathered together, our rivals strike right in our home base in the campaign setting's main city. And, chaos ensues as they attack our leaders and steal our stuff and, unleash our menagerie of monsters. And so, out of the outcome of this, the what they wrought sets the stage for the story that sort of progresses over the rest of the season, while the event of the day is to, quell the riots and put out the fires and, try to thwart whatever mischief our enemies are up to sort of at that day.
Do all the players in those games, are they all on the same side?
Yeah, so that's okay. One of the, they experimented earlier with a more competitive model, not one that would directly pit us against each other, but sort of a competition in the room, and it didn't flow as smoothly or feel right for the setting that Pathfinder has built. Mm-hmm. Right at the core of the game, the campaign setting is our motto: explore, cooperate, report. And the idea is it's sort of a clever sleight of hand to say, we have these five or six strangers who've all been picked by the organization to come together and do something together. But it's because they all belong to society and explains why five actual real world strangers have sat down to play a game together. But because of that mantra of cooperation is so baked into how people build their characters and how people participate in the campaign setting, when they tried something competitive, it just didn't feel right for the setting. And it didn't flow as naturally.
Mm-hmm. It feels like an MMO for tabletop.
Yeah.
It's a raid, right?
Yeah. It's a giant in-person raid party.
Yeah.
It kind of feels that way. Yeah. Sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Just as chaotic, just as many Doritos.
I think what's important maybe to fit in there too is that, when a raid party in an MMO, everyone's the same level typically. And when you come to Pathfinder to one of these big events, the tables are actually broken into tiers by character level.
Oh, nice.
First level characters can go and have just as meaningful of an experience as the highest tier level characters. And it's different challenges and they'll actually divide the scenarios up to a certain extent. So you'll still be exploring the areas, but the noobs will be dealing with the skeletons over in that crypt, while the epic adventurers go and deal with the dragons who are bombarding the gateway or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So everyone is participating, and especially when the high tier table does, kill one of these, epic monsters that's threatening the setting, those successes cascade out to all the tables. So the few people in the room who are able to do these big challenges feel like they've actually had a bigger contribution or a meaningful contribution. They didn't just put themselves at risk for some gold. Mm-hmm.
Do people bring their own characters, or how do they kind of get separated out into these tiers?
Typically people bring their own characters. You can play pregens. Pathfinder has pregens at least three of the tiers. But people are people become very proprietary of their characters. I think a comment I heard from a lot of players just in general GMing at Gen Con was, I didn't come to Gen Con to play a pregen. Right? Some people only get there once a year. That's their big gaming thing of the event. And they want to play these characters, and grow their character and have that ownership
and a number of the adventures are like exclusive to that con or cons in general, right? Like you couldn't get that at your Pathfinder Society at home, correct?
So especially the specials, the multi-tier specials, they're hard to run in anywhere but a con format. And so, mm-hmm. If you only get one con in a year, then of course this is where you get to play the special. There are also some exclusive scenarios that can only come out at cons. And usually what happens is after 2 or 3 years, they're sort of allowed out to a broader audience. But we're trying to support cons and support, support the organizers by saying, here's some special stuff you can hold in reserve to draw the players in. So it adds something special. You didn't just come to a con. You came to the con and got to do something that you couldn't do in your local gaming store.
Awesome. And Troy and Darcy, you guys ran The Strange, right?
Close. It was Cypher System, but it was a sci-fi setting of the Cypher System. So it's generic Cypher System in basically Star Wars with the serial numbers filed off.
Okay, yep. I thought I heard about a Star Wars-y game happening, so...
Yep. Yeah, that could have happened in The Strange, definitely, but it was straight-up Star Wars.
It was in a different galaxy, far, far away.
Far, far away, exactly.
So your game had players moving between tables, so how did that work?
So Troy's two-table game is the one that primarily like featured it as a mechanic, which he can elaborate on.
Yeah, so I did a two... Well, so my friend Dave Hanlon and I wrote a two-table adventure that will, you know, basically for our little home cons, I guess, you know, where we get 15, 20 people together on a weekend and play games all weekend. Mm-hmm. And we wrote this, and from some of our experience in playing two-table games, we wanted to kind of provide that sort of experience. So what we did is create an adventure where there were actually two groups of almost identical people. They were the same people, but they were like different, like versions of themselves. So like different, you know, mirror universe you,
yeah,
for
alternate
instance.
Universe. Yeah.
Yeah. Alternate universe. And so they started off these two tables completely separate, and then something happened and we switched a player at the two tables. So it was the same character, but we switched the players. And then all of a sudden, you know, this person didn't really appear to switch, but was acting differently. And, you know, the group had to kind of react to that. And on top of that, there was, you know, the complex that they were in was the same complex, but again, alternate universe. So in one version of it, it was completely like broken down and dilapidated. And in the other version, it was still in somewhat working condition and they could get things to work and kind of look at some things. So yeah, we switched a player early just to kind of get the idea flowing that this just wasn't, well, so we switched a player early to let everyone know that we weren't just running the same game on two tables, which mm-hmm. is kind of how we had sold it to people, because we sort of surprised everyone with this.
I was a player. I'm miffed.
The inside story.
Yeah. You know, so that kind of let people know that, hey, there's a little bit more going on here. And then about halfway through the adventure, we mashed up the tables together. So all, I think we had 11 players, all 11 players came together and met their alternate selves. Mm. So there were some moments. And then something forced the group to split, but they didn't split along the like good guy, bad guy lines. They split like, you know, just kind of split randomly. So we ended up with like some pairs together and some split up. And then ultimately they, you know, came back together for the climax. And the climax was that this whole facility basically was trying to fix reality, because reality had been busted. That's why there were multiple versions of people. And at the end of the facility, it could be fixed, but only one version of any of the people could get out.
Troy.
So yeah, once one half of the group left, the other began to fade.
This feels like a Voyager episode.
Totally.
Did half of them have mustaches?
Yes.
They didn't, but, you know, it might have been a way that we could have differentiated them. But yeah, so that was...
That were like badder versions.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, one would be, you know, hey, I'm curious. And the other one would be like, hey, I'm murderous or whatever.
Right.
You know, so yeah, it was just a... You know, we set out when we made it with the goal in mind that we wanted to do table swapping and mashing up and splitting apart. That was kind of the goal of how we wanted ours to work. So it was less of kind of a group working together towards, you know, like a common goal. And like as tables would complete a task, you would, you know, if so many tables completed or whatever, things are going well. It's more of just a experience of here we are, we're going to see how, you know, things just shake out and get some of that role playing going. And, you know, I mean, one thing that was nice for us and one reason really we decided to do it in the Cypher system is that we felt that it just lent itself to that kind of mismatch improvisational type style.
Mm-hmm.
One of the hardest things for us to get right was the timing. So when we bring the groups together, they have to end up in the same place at about the same time. So to try to keep that pacing going between myself and the other GM was tricky. You know, so one might have to shorten or one might have to add. So there was a lot of like texting back and forth of like, hey, I'm going to be ready in 5 minutes. I'm like, can you make it 10 or, you know, whatever. It was a lot of on the fly kind of pacing changes that we had to go through. And honestly, that we had the luxury to go through because there's just two of us, right? So we were just coordinating with each other, not 50 tables or even six.
Yeah. Across any of these games, is that difficult to keep in mind? Because you're, you know, as a GM, you've already keeping track of 4, 5, 6 players, but to coordinate with all these other GMs, like, how do you manage that?
So we use a little bit of Deus Ex to mitigate it. Typically, the scenario will be broken down into acts, and transitions between the acts will be punctuated by sort of room-wide box text, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. And with that will come, you know, oh, look, a band of Pathfinders has come to your aid. So if you're in the middle of a combat, you know, you imagine a, you know, rolling mob of heroes run through and finish off whatever you're dealing with. And so that you're all, everyone sort of transitions to the next stage simultaneously. So there's a little bit of disbelief suspension required.
Yeah. Right. Would you have to with that many people, I imagine?
It's the only way to make it work well.
What do you do if your people like cruise through the encounter and if you have too much time?
Typically, each act they try to give some player agency. So where you go in the first act, you have some room to maneuver, and within each sort of area that you might be able to explore, there'll be 3 or 4 set encounters, and then off to the side, there's a stack of like if the GM feels like encounters. Oh, nice. And so as the players sort of explore, you can mix in some of the other ones to just sort of each table has a slightly varied experience. So if, you know, afterwards you're talking, oh, did you see that? No, but did you see this? Oh yeah, we did that one too. So everyone has an interesting experience, but it's not a cloned experience across the whole room by any stretch of the imagination. And so, you know, you may do 3 to 5 different things between in an act and not, you know, so you don't necessarily miss out on a vast thing. You did your own thing and it felt like a complete experience.
Cool. And Darcy, you were going to tell us about the sci-fi game.
So there are 6 different, basically the shtick is that, you know, you're scrappy rebels in a galaxy overpowered by an Imperium that is holding all the planets in its icy grip, and you're trying to basically take out an unimaginably huge, terrible planet-destroying weapon, right? But what's cool is the 6 tables were given different sort of areas of the complex that they were supposed to sort of, you know, goals that they had. So, you know, one was to, like, to attack a bunch of the like getaway TIE fighters, essentially, right? The the ships. And one was like to actually destroy the or impair the weapon itself. One was to rescue a scientist of theirs who was there that had some cool complications. But the interesting thing was that there was really very little there. There was like a few paragraphs, like three, four, and then a little map. And then a lot of suggestions on the side of like encounters to sort of weave in. And the expectation was that you would really, it would be the people at your table coming up with what was important to them and their characters alongside this goal, and to like really come up with as crazy of things as they could and talk to the other tables. So like I just leveled with my table when I got to it, and I was like, you guys, we do not have 4 hours of content on this page. You can see that there's no way 4 hours of content is in my hand right now. So get crazy, do weird stuff, try different things, talk to the other tables. And I was lucky that my group really ran with it, but I had some like GM intrusions planned to sort of like pull at the characters as that went. And so we had a bit of player swapping when certain groups would finish like too much early or something. Like if the players just wanted to like, you know, sometimes you get a table that's just like, I want to do the adventure. I don't care about my character development. I don't care about these other things. I want to like win this scenario. And so some tables finished quick, but some of those players still wanted to play. And so they came as reinforcements, and it was the game runner was really good at sort of narratively, you know, bringing in reinforcements. So we had some new people join the game, but it would have been cool to have thought of a better way to like narratively tie them to your table. If I had known to be prepared for that, I think that could have been like even cooler, as opposed to you got a reinforcement. Yay. He's the same mechanically as some of your other as one of your other characters. So that was a little tricky, but I mean, this is the first time they've run something like this, but I think it went off really, really well. My players were, I was just in love. I was just a little puddle of happy. They were like dressing up as stormtroopers, essentially. They were they were running into lost lovers and like totally playing it up. They sacrificed a droid, a companion. I came up with like pulled out of a hat a bunch of like, you know, force wielding inquisitors, and they like in robo assassins. It was just fabulous. It went in ways I never could have expected. And they came up with really wacky ideas of, you know, modding up crazy attack droids and sending them to the other tables. And it was really cool. It worked out really well. But it was like very much in the hands of the GM and the players at the table. So I think with six tables full of GMs, you know, are ready to do that, it worked out really well. But I'm curious to see how Monte Cook Games thinks about, you know, maybe structuring that more or less next time. I really liked how it worked out for my GM style, I think. I don't know. You ran it too, Troy, right?
Yeah. You know, and I think that very, very similarly to your experience, it definitely fit my style, and it ran really well for me, and I had a lot of fun with it. You know, I think the big thing is that it is in a con setting, can be a little difficult to, with an adventure that's a little more freeform, to guarantee how each GM is going to kind of run their table, and how, for lack of a better term, how well they're going to run their table.
Right.
You know, so it can be a little difficult to, you know, when you have a more structured adventure, you know that everyone is going to get a similar experience, where, you know, if you have kind of these more freeform adventures, I think that there is a much wider range of experience that was provided. I think most of it overall was very good, and I think that everybody more or less, you know, enjoyed themselves. Like you said, it's just some of them were a little short. You know, the GMs just weren't equipped, I guess, to kind of improv and pad and add some of those stormtrooper love stories or crazy insane prisoners or whatever it is that we added to our games.
Is what it was missing.
Well, that's really what Star Wars needs, right? More kissing.
Exactly. All games need that.
All games need more kissing. You know, so I mean, I think that there's definitely some room to kind of improve the way that was done. And, you know, a lot of that, I think, is, you know, I look at how Pathfinder or D&D run games with 50, 100, 150 tables worth of people. You know, so it can be managed. It's just, what is the best way to do that, you know, for for each game and for each system.
And speaking of systems, we've got a wide variety of experience here running these types of games and playing them. Are there systems that you think are better suited for this type of play, or systems that might not work?
I think your D20 systems sort of scale well when you want, I'll say, homogeneous sort of experience, or at least similar experience. Mm-hmm. It's not always the best improv system. Especially in the organized play format, you know, in organized play, we don't talk about GMs. We talk about judges who are adjudicating the rules, and we strive for, at least in the running of things, that they're run fairly, and you can sort of sit down anywhere and play, the same game, and you know what to expect, and you can expect fairness. And so, you can have a mass, you know, combat-y, skill encounter, like the kind of stuff that mechanically is strong in D&D and has been for a long time. That very, you know, it's a tactical game with some role playing on top of it. I'm sure the internet will disagree with me that that's all it is. There's lots of room for good storytelling in a D&D, but it is at its heart, you know, it's a combat system. And then you have a game on top of it that you role play in. And so in that context, it scales really well in a big room, and you can have, you know, epic heroes doing epic things, but it doesn't necessarily give a lot of room to go off the rails, because you're targeting certain successes and sort of to meet those room criteria. And if you go wildly off, there isn't a lot of space to coordinate or make that have the impact on the room, and so you lose the I'm going to pronounce it wrong, the verisimilitude. And so it you stay within the borders, it's good.
Yeah, it sounds like the way most of these are structured, having the railroad there in front of you, having those tracks to stay on, is pretty important with that many people.
And I alluded to it earlier, the idea that you have lots of encounters you can choose from. And so the railway is really wide, but it's still going in the same direction.
You know, you're going to get rising action and a conclusion, which is nice to rely on.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess I think about it as far as like any game systems that, you know, couldn't handle this. And I don't know that there really are any. I mean, I think that you can kind of adapt this type of experience for any system, really. I mean, it really kind of just depends on what sort of, you know, experience you want, you know, your teams to have. Like, this is something I've been thinking about that I have no idea how it would work because I'm not a great game designer. But, you know, like, what would multi-table headspace look like?
Yeah.
Right? Like, let's have all of the table emotions, but they feed into a master emotion track that feeds back to all the teams at some point. You know, just something like that. Or, you know, I don't know, something as crazy as like worldwide wrestling, and you have like multiple matches going on, and then different people go to different tables to fight different other people or whatever. And so, I mean, I think it's all about what, you know, what is the experience?
I have seen quasi successfully run a multi-table game of Risk.
Oh, man. Okay.
I'm going to tell you, beers were involved, but they called it Sliders Risk. And
awesome.
You know, in Risk, when you play the card sets, it would usually give you more armies. In Sliders Risk, playing a card set would open a portal between one of the territory cards you held on one board and the other board, and then you immediately inserted yourself into the turn order on the second table. And once the portals were built, they were two-directional, and madness ensued.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it can be any game, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking about some considerations of, like, I think there are elements that you can incorporate multi-table play into any game. I just think one thing I was thinking of is, like, one thing critical to maybe all games is that you might want a pretty strong sense of self, or the strong sense of the universe or universes that you're all playing in, because you don't want to be doing like world building as soon as someone switches, or like, you know, you want to have something in common that you're all working with. I think like zany games would work really well, like Lasers and Feelings, like mm-hmm. you're all playing, you know, zany Star Trek, right? Like that would work beautifully for multi-tables. Because there are so few mechanics, and like you just are your character narratively. So there's little to balance there. So you can really go off the walls. Like the zanier you get, you know, I think is easier when you have very few mechanics that you need to like worry about balancing for with these different groups. Mostly I've been thinking about, how do I get a multi-table game with lots of kissing? And my answer to that so far is, you know, certain games like Fate or something, if you were in a setting where you could, if you were in a strongly defined setting, I think you could, you know, that's a game that, you know, has mechanics that let you have social combat and things. And I think that would, it'd be fine, perfectly fine to kiss there. But I've been thinking about like New World Magiscola is basically a multi-table mm-hmm. walking around game.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of kissing and romance and teen drama, right? So that's it's a LARP, but I mean, they have adjudicators, you know, you pull someone over when you need someone to be a GM for like to work something out, as far as I can understand. Meg, did you go or are you going?
I didn't, but I'm trying to go next year.
But I feel like that's a similar experience, right?
There's so many small, like from the experiences that I've heard, it sounds like there are so many things happening that it's like several small games going on. You're never quite sure what everything that's going on. You get right. like little bits and pieces, or you're like, you can see people over there doing a thing, but you're never quite fully clued in on what's happening. So yeah, I would agree based on what I've heard.
Yeah, there might be some interesting like advice, that crosstalk that could be fruitful between like the LARP multi-table scene and the tabletop multi-table scene.
Absolutely. I know there's a lot of things built in for like debriefing and catching people up on what's been going on and in the scenes cool. that they weren't involved in. So that would be interesting to see what could be brought in. Yeah. Cool. So how do you plan something like this? Like, this is so much bigger than letting a single table of players, you know, either follow something that you built or just run freely. So how do you handle this many people, all the contingencies, or do you?
I think within the Pathfinder space, it's much like preparing any scenario. As a table GM, you have, you know, you usually pre-allocated a tier, so you're not trying to prepare the whole thing, but just the encounters you're likely to run.
Mm-hmm.
You do need to take the extra time to read carefully how the interactions work, and, you know, a lot of the time we'll see out of the community will arise, you know, come, you know, click on this Google Doc and get all these handouts, because, you know, there'll be event trackers or status trackers or handouts for the players that just boil out the core mechanics that you need for certain stages. So there's I think the madmen and women who write these things cram as much text into the scenario as possible, and edit it and play test it as best they can. But then the community feeds back, you know, the helpers and the things that get you best prepared. And it's, other than that, it's just kind of, we all would meet before it, talk through the complicated parts, you know, make sure we have our hand signals down, using tokens or whatnot, so that the room understands sort of the basic mechanics of how that room is going to run.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, hope and experience.
Yeah. Can you even play test to the degree of, people that you're going to have? Like, do you sort of have to take it in small pieces and then just sort of see how it all fits together?
So I haven't experienced it, but they sometimes will talk about running a slot zero before the con starts,
mm-hmm.
where the GMs who are going to run the specials will actually have, you know, the folks who have been more intimately involved in creating the specials run it for those GMs,
mm-hmm.
and so that they, you know, they have the inside track. They've probably already read it coming to the con. They kind of know what's going to happen, but sort of experiencing it from the player's vantage and working through it mechanically and just talking through it helps out. And then because our semi-paramilitary organization of volunteers for society is so large, what happens at local cons is you usually have one or two people who is running who played it at a bigger con, and so they come to those prep sessions with that experience and say, okay, you know, this is what worked well. Here's where we lost a lot of time, and you get that, that experience trickles down through the core of volunteers.
Nice. Troy or Darcy, have you dealt with planning these at all or just running?
So, you know, my planning kind of is limited to the two-player adventure that we wrote, that Dave and I wrote. And, you know, what we did is we kind of just wanted to, I guess, you know, write it like any other adventure, sort of. You know, we came up with what our initial premise was going to be. We came up with kind of what we wanted the climax to look like, built in some of the pieces in between. And I think you just do all of that stuff with the lens of your intertable interaction. So we thought about, okay, we know that we want them to come together partway through the adventure. How can we make that happen? We know we want to have a scene where one group is like looking on a security monitor and they see another group. So they see themselves and kind of know that something's going on, you know, and we even toyed with some stuff. We tried it the first time we ran it when Darcy was a player, of like the one group being able to like access a loudspeaker and the other group being able to hear it. That didn't work very well. You couldn't understand it, but, you know, we gave it a try. You know, so, yeah, it was just, we kind of made the adventure, but at every step of the way, we said, how can we make this unique or different or interesting because we have two tables in play and we want the players to mix and match and have that interactivity between them. So, you know, that's kind of how we approached it from a planning perspective. Is let's plan an adventure, but let's see what can we do to make it special and make it a unique experience that you can't maybe get every time that you go and play your game.
Yeah, that's one of the other things I was curious about too, is do they just feel like a bigger Pathfinder game, or do they just feel like a bigger Cypher System game, or are they truly unique experiences that you couldn't get at the smaller table?
You get an energy in the room that you don't get from individual games, and it boils to you know a climax as the room is successful and you get visceral cheering. In fact, when it's over, when it's done, and we've succeeded, it's a unique experience. At least that's been my experience, and it's something that really comes out in the room, and people leave there feeling like they've been part of something unique.
Definitely, that's how it felt with the Cypher System game. There was cheering, especially with the weird interactions that I saw between the tables. You know, it definitely felt. It didn't feel anything like just a normal game. There was lots and lots of interaction in my session. And we kind of did a debrief at the end that was really cool. You know, whoever was left at the end, which was most people, we gathered outside and there was sort of a end crawl sort of thing where like they talked about, you know, how we succeeded. And then we sort of went around, bounced around the groups talking about some like highlights of what they did. And so you kind of understood what all the fuss was about when a bunch of people got up and started, you know, behaving oddly at some table across the way. And it was like a second, like the epilogue worked really well for us too. It just made you feel like, you know, you got to see what effects your interactions with the other tables actually had, because they would like be like, and then we got, you know, this cool hacked droid from this other table, and this is what we did with it. It was beautiful. I think the debrief was huge in coming together at the end.
That's fantastic. So is there anything that you think we could take from these massive games and bring back to the small table, to the small games? Anything that we could, that you've learned, tips or tricks or things that you would want to try?
Ooh, good question.
I think, for us, I find the way it caps off or starts off a story is really effective, and they're getting better and better at bringing the story through the seasons of Pathfinder. And so using it to tell the big stories that people have been expecting, and it builds that anticipation. You know, knowing the special's coming, getting ready for it, getting your character in the level you want to do it, you know, planning to meet at a con with your friends. I think, you know, that it's tied back is what we get from it. Okay. I'm not sure there's anything sort of that we can take and use.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, I think like the anticipation, the really crystallized sense of this is a big deal to what we do here today. You know, we can't save it for next week. It's now or, you know, never. You know, they tend to be, I think there are little things that I could do to capture that, you know, either just building up anticipation in a campaign or, you know, like setting the mood, right? Like there's a lot of atmosphere there, right? So for a big home game, right, I could either have props or somehow set the ceremony that this is a big deal, what we do here today. The other thing is that I've seen done in a strange game, like people have texted or, you know, tweeted out, as their character, you know, and gotten feedback from people. And so people have, James August Walls did this in a strange game. One of his players, and like he tweeted out, and like other people on Twitter like reacted, and somehow he turned that into mechanically like support in the game. And I totally forget how it worked. But it was really cool. So I think there might be smaller ways you can get that outside influence that was really surprising and special and fun, especially in a modern game, right? You can call up somebody and have their answer feedback into your game or something. Mm-hmm. It was pretty neat. I feel like there's something there.
Yeah, I think a couple of the one-shot games, I know those guys will do that. They'll call one of their friends and give them no explanation whatsoever and ask them a completely in-game, in-character question. And, of course, most of them are improv actors, right. So they'll just roll with it. But
jeez. So pro tip, have improv actor friends?
Yeah, or friends that just understand how weird you are. Like,
yes.
the one thing that I've thought about, if somebody was really ambitious or, you know, to maybe put something together, is essentially the idea of a multi-table game, but played with one table of players over multiple sessions. So you would have, like, say session one is you play with your group of players. They have a set of characters. Those characters do something. You know, maybe it's a, you know, maybe it's a heist game, and they go and they attempt to, or they steal some painting or whatever it is. And you make some notes along the way of maybe where they, you know, drop some evidence or whatever. And then the next week you have the same group of players, but now they have different characters. And they are the investigators attempting to hunt down the people who just stole this painting. And they know from a meta perspective that they just stole this painting, you know, like as different characters, but to maybe try to put together, you know, how would they approach that and what would they do? You know, essentially knowing the answers, but how do you get to it from an investigative sense, and how do you build the game that way? You know, but just different ways to maybe play with that and do some sort of, you know, episodic back and forth type of game where you're switching like two sides of a conflict every session or something.
That's really cool. I like the idea that they would maybe I'm just mean, but, I feel like if I was doing this for my group, I wouldn't tell them and see how hard they made their lives as the robbers or the burglars, and then switch the table. Yeah, that would be fun. But I might be a mean GM. So
or you could even switch it. You could have them investigate a robbery first and come up with how it was done.
I would
make them execute that robbery.
Perfect. Good. I love that you're meaner than me.
So there was actually in our season 7 scenario that I described earlier, the attack on the convocation, as one of the sort of specials that was also only available at the cons, but just a single table session, you got to play pre-gens who were the villains, and you had to go through the implication was you were the setup team doing the sabotage before the main attack. And so
nice.
You had to go in and you had to release the menagerie and kidnap that important NPC and steal that stuff from the vault. And, you know, because the villains have been with us for so long and they're terrible and we all hate them because it was really cathartic to be the villain. And, you know, there are some reoccurring NPCs that not everyone likes. And it's like, well, I'm going to take this moment to sap that person and drag them into the bushes.
Oh, man.
That's cool.
That's such a good idea.
These are all great ideas. And it sounds like such a unique and special experience. Are these games pretty exclusive to cons? Or how could people get into playing these games? Is it just at conventions?
I think with our table, sort of minimum table requirements, you know, you could do a games day, but you need a space you can jam five tables.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be at a convention the size of Gen Con. You know, like I said, we ran our two-table game with, you know, basically 11 players and two GMs, so 13 people, okay, which isn't a ton of people, but it's still more than your average, you know, kind of game night usually that people have. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think it takes some special coordination, but it all depends on the size. You know, if you just want to do a two table interactive experience, I think that, you know, anybody could kind of organize that. And, you know, a lot of people have houses or apartments that have enough room for two tables worth of people.
Yeah.
And you could fit that in, you know, but then if it's something like our Cypher game with six or the specials with a minimum of five tables, you know, you probably need some sort of event space and a larger kind of game group or organization, at least, that would be interested in putting that on.
Or to be very pushy with your friends and acquaintances.
All your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they weren't gamers, they are now.
That's been my motto. I have two things that I think. I think currently that realm exists mostly at cons, right? But I think you can get some of the experience and the excitement and the interactivity just through audience interaction, either through, like, you know, Google event hangouts that the audience can talk to the people who are streaming the video.
Mm, yeah.
Or, you know, there's Twitch stream, right? You get a lot of audience interaction. And so I think that can give you a lot of the interactivity fun, although it's not multi-tables, but it's at least multi-groups of people. And then I don't see why it's not possible to do over the internet.
I was just going to say we've had some groups experimenting, especially in the further extents where it's just impossible to get big cons together. We'll have, you know, two tables here, three tables there, and one table on the internet and exclusively, and run it disconnected.
And just, like, you know, G-chatting through it, right, with the GMs. That could work pretty well.
As long as the overseers are sort of communicating, you can sort of have that effect.
Awesome.
Cool. Do you guys know of any resources for people who want to try running a game like this, or, like, tips to how to set this kind of thing up?
So for Pathfinder Society, you know, we have a list on Paizo's website of local volunteers, and you need to sort of get in touch with one of the venture lieutenants, venture captains, or regional coordinators when you want to run something this big. They don't sell the scenarios for the things these big. They're usually given to the GMs who run them, but you need to have they need to be given.
Mm-hmm.
So you can reach, if you have sort of the capacity, you can reach out to those people to gain access. And with that access, there's usually a dose of advice available. If you have questions, how do I do this? How do I run this? You know, all the people I've worked with are super excited about this and just want to share their hobby and passion. So they'll be happy to set you up.
Well, that's wonderful.
I have one piece of advice with respect to Cypher System. Their asset team is what they call their demo team. If you're interested in running these kind of games, becoming an asset team member is a great place to start. It's where, you know, the adventures they release to demo way before they get out to the public. You can get all that material, and there's a lot of GM discussion over, you know, what went well, what didn't, some advice. So I think if they continue doing these big multi-table games, that'll be a good place where we'll be hashing it out. So if you're interested in running at Cypher System, that's a great resource.
I have an answer for that as well. So I think just in relationship to the cipher system stuff that we've talked about, the Star Wars, not Star Wars game that was run at Gen Con, I believe might eventually be available as a Glimmer, which are kind of like the PDF only downloads that Monty Cook Games does. They usually make their Gen Con adventures available. So there's a chance that that one will be available, even if you just want to see kind of what the structure is like and what it looks like and how they put some of it together. And I also know that Dave is working on publishing The Idealizer, which is the two table game that we did in Cyphercaster magazine. So nice. In a future issue of that, The Idealizer will be in there, which is a game for two tables. So, you know, again, just if you want to try your hand at running it, or if you just want to take a look at how it's built and some of the things that we put into it.
Perfect. Oh, boy. All right. I think this episode is going to come out a little soon, so we may not have links to those things yet, but I will definitely reshare them on the Twitter when those come to be. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, so any convention plans for running more of these types of games?
So the short answer is yes. The long answer is it depends on where you live. So Pathfinder has an events listing mm-hmm. on their site. There's probably a con every weekend for almost every weekend of the year somewhere. They don't have necessarily the big event games at all of them. But, seek out your local events and see what's running there, or I'll forward you the link to our events calendar. I know in the Ontario region, we're sort of done our big stuff for the year. We're running a few tables this weekend at Phantasm, which is a local con, but kind of a small one. And I know I have another con in October, but it's still a small one. So come the new year, we sort of kick off in February, and then there's February to August is just con.
Awesome. How about you, Darcy or Troy? Are you guys running anything in the near future or not so
Heck
near
yeah,
future?
Yeah, I am. Nothing essentially multi-table yet, but I will be at Acadicon. It's the RPG Academy's con in Dayton, Ohio, November 11th through 13th, I believe.
Yeah.
I just signed up to run a few games. I have space to become Darcy GM bot yet again. So maybe I will get a multi-table game in there, or perhaps I'll just harass people to give input to my game across systems, adventures, and settings.
Nice.
We'll see. Come to AcadCon.
Yeah.
My con season is done for the year, so I don't have anything coming up in
Except
the near future.
Except for PitchCon, where you're going to run our multi-table worldwide wrestling game that you promised as of this episode.
I have some other plans for PitchCon, but that's my local. That's a little local con. About
Exclusive.
20 people come to my house, and we play games all weekend.
Ooh, yeah, invite only.
Exactly.
Cool. Anything else you guys want to make sure we talk about? Or
there's just something weird that popped in my head and I wasn't sure where to jump in. Not weird, kind of cool.
I like both.
because the events are big and they're special, it's something that the company invests in to try to make special. Mm-hmm. So this year at Gen Con, for the first time, the parts of the scenario that were acted by the overseer GMs, who would sort of stand up and do, over the microphone, room-wide announcements and try to get into character and improv. They pre-recorded and mixed with sound effects. They've been partnering with, I believe it's Sirenscape, to do sort of the RPG, sound effects kind of stuff. And so they worked with them to come up with a fully produced audio track for their NPCs with, dragons roaring and breathing fire and portals opening and all that stuff in the background. And they're making that available to GMs who are running the event beyond Gen Con. But so to make it sort of extra special, there's extra special resources available. And it just made it a neat experience.
Oh, that's so cool.
That is so
awesome.
Cool. Well, where can we find you guys on the internet?
in the background lurking. No, okay. I don't have any real formal presence on the internet except for the games I run. So okay. If you're in Ontario in the Halton area and you'd like to play Pathfinder Society, we have a Google group for our monthly meetup. I'll share that link with you.
Cool. I will put it in the show notes.
You can always find and hang out and chat with me on Twitter at TroyP23. And you can listen to me on CypherSpeak.
You will also have to listen to me on CypherSpeak, so get ready. But I am findable elsewhere on the internet, on G+ and Twitter a bunch, at Darcy L. Ross. So please come talk to me. I love to talk about games.
Yay.
And snails.
Games about snails.
Yes, especially that.
Cool. Thank you all so much. This has been awesome.
Yeah, this has been helpful.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Jeffrey, Troy, and Darcy for making time for this multi-guest episode. You can find their links in the show notes and definitely add CypherSpeak to your podcatcher if you're at all interested in the system. It's a great show. Speaking of shows, Modifier's bitter podcast rivals Brandon and James over at Stop Hack and Roll have been on a similar wavelength and are also talking about big games this week. Check them out for more excellent discussion on the subject. And their episode 2 weeks ago is where we'll be headed next, Getting Small with Jeff Stormer. I'm suspecting some kind of podcast espionage is going on around here. I'm watching you two. And just a heads up, heroes, I'll be at Metatopia and Acatacon next month. Metatopia is the first weekend in November in Morristown, New Jersey, and Acatacon is the weekend after that in Dayton, Ohio. I'll keep the Twitter updated with any pertinent event information for both cons. I'm looking forward to meeting you and hearing all about your games. That's it for this week, heroes. You can find Modifier on Twitter at Modifier Podcast or at the headquarters at modifierpodcast.tumblr.com. You can send comments, questions, or contribution suggestions to modifierpodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, please consider leaving a review on iTunes, as that helps more people find us. Modifier is a proud member of the One Shot Podcast Network, an amazing family of RPG podcasts that includes incredible shows like One Shot, Campaign, Backstory, and Talking Tabletop. Modifier's theme music was created by my favorite Bothan, Kat Greenfield, whose myriad talents are on display at katgreenfield.com. Next time on Modifier, we scale games down with the expert on two-player RPGs, Jeff Stormer. See you then!